Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Lisa Mullins. A few images from Boston this week. A commuter ferry stuck, frozen in the harbor. Trains crippled, buses filled to the gills, and Bostonians feeling the pressure.
The bus sucks. But then you're like looking at everything they're dealing with. You're like, sucks for everyone.
So today, Governor Charlie Baker appoints a commission to study the T and diagnose its disease.
There are inherent challenges that we need to overcome before we can run the MBTA more efficiently and reliably for the traveling public.
It's the third major T review in just the past 7 years.
Meanwhile, a new WBUR poll suggests that Greater Boston is souring on the Olympics.
It has to do with voters now having a new appreciation of how bad the MBTA actually is and seeing the impact of the storm and thinking that there are other priorities on which money would be better spent.
Plus, Walmart says it will increase its minimum wage to $10 an hour.
The $1 billion new investment we are making will lift the wages of approximately 500,000 of our fellow associates.
So what will that mean for the 11,000 Walmart employees here in Massachusetts?
Lots to talk about in the news this week with our guest Joan Vinnocchi, columnist for the Boston Globe. Hello, Joan.
Hi.
And
nice to be here.
Nice to have you here. And former Boston City Councilor and regular writer for the Boston Globe, Tom Keene. Hi, Tom.
Pleasure to be here.
Okay, this afternoon, as you both heard, Governor Charles Baker announced that he is forming a commission to conduct yet another study of the problems that plague the MBTA.
There have been a lot of reports done before around here that they can rely on and pursue. We'll engage in conversations with other experts, many of whom they know on a first-name basis, to enable us, the MBTA, and the Commonwealth to ground our future plans and recommendations in the best available knowledge and information.
Okay, that again, Charlie Baker from earlier today. Joan Vinnocchi, there's an old adage in politics, which is that when leaders want to punt on something, they appoint a commission to study it. There have been three big reports already on the problems facing the T in just the past 7 years. Any reason to believe that something more useful is going to come from Baker's review this time around?
Well, in this case, I think he did put a 30-day limit to their study, which is a good thing. And he's also using the we word, taking ownership for this. I think he must have read your poll, which showed that people don't blame him for the T's mess, but they expect him to fix it. So I think there is pressure on Governor Baker right now to make this more than just another study that gathers the proverbial dust.
And Tom, do you have any kind of hope that that could happen? Is this a productive move, smart management, or not?
So, yeah, my first reaction was not another study. But I think that, in fact, he's entitled to one. It is, as Joan said, a very tight time frame. And he's entitled to actually have his own look-see as opposed to the look-see of a Democratic administration. Will he fix it? I think he has to. I think he really does own this one. You know, Barack Obama didn't create the Great Recession, but he owns the recovery and had to get the recovery in place. I think the same is true with Charlie Baker. He has got to get this fixed. People are going to give him a pass this year. They will not give him a pass if it happens in winter 2016.
Okay.
Could I add one more thing?
Please.
I think also that Governor Baker understands the problem more than he's actually communicated to the people of Massachusetts. As a member of the Weld Salucci administrations back in the 90s, I think he's well aware of what the funding issue is and the overall problem. So I think he really is equipped to do something about it if he wants to.
Well, the question is, why would he not want to communicate to the Commonwealth that he understands the problem?
Well, I think he's been, over the past couple of weeks, kind of grappling with it. The first instinct was to make it Beverly Scott's problem, to put it on the tee. And I think as the public outrage grew, he realized that he had to take ownership for it. And, I mean, I guess it does remain to be seen whether he does do that and come up with a solution. But I do think there's public pressure right now for that to happen.
So in terms of a solution, the Globe reported that some folks heard Governor Baker leave the door open for a possible tax or fee to fix the problems of the T. The governor's spokesman said categorically and simply no, that is not what the governor was saying. At the same time, there seems to be pretty wide agreement that the T has been chronically underfunded, has not been funded well enough for many, many years now. We spoke with MIT Sloan School Professor John Sturman this week, and he pretty much threw cold water on the idea that money is not at the root of the T's problems.
The plain fact of the matter is no manager is going to be able to turn the system around without a very substantial infusion of new resources. There's simply too large of a backlog of deferred maintenance. And the result is that the system as a whole has been sliding into unreliability and lower performance for decades, not just for the last few years.
And Tom, what do you think? Can it be done without the money?
So you need money. The question is, do you have to get the money through increased taxes? And I think that's really where you're going to see the resistance here. Yes, the T is going to need additional resources focused on its existing system. But the debate is going to be whether you can do that through internal reforms, through cutting back on expansion, through rider increases and fares and this and the like. I think Baker will be very, very resistant to new taxes. And let's remember, you know, outside of the Boston metropolitan area, those taxpayers don't benefit from the T at all.
Yeah, but at this point, do those who do benefit from the T feel inclined to pay higher rates for what they're not getting right now?
I suspect probably not. I suspect there'll be an enormous amount of resistance, but I think that's something going to have to look at.
Joan, what do you think?
I agree with Tom. I think there's going to be an enormous amount of resistance. Absolutely. This governor ran on the campaign of no taxes, no new fees. So to change that would be fairly dramatic. The Pioneer Institute, which is a conservative think tank, has come to the same conclusion as that expert from MIT, that some infusion, some new investment is needed. So again, I mean, I don't know how he solves the problem. I don't think taxes should be considered the first answer. I think they really should look at the philosophy that's fueled the expansion over the last 10 years, start there and decide whether that's really where they want the T to go. But eventually he will have to decide, am I going to put more money in this? And if so, where am I going to get it?
So your recommendation for the best place they should look to get it if it's not taxes?
Well, I'm not an expert on that. I don't know where they should look. I just think that first they should look at what they're spending money on now, what they need money for. And then people who are smarter than I am about fiscal matters should say, this is what we have to do to get it.
Yeah, actually, you wrote an interesting article in the Globe today when you talked about modernization and compared it to Logan Airport and saying that the idea is to modernize and have a core infrastructure before you do the expansion. Make the analogy there.
Well, I think that what's happening at Logan is really very interesting in connection with the MBTA. You've got this airport now that's bringing in all these nonstop flights to international destinations. They just announced a new one to Shanghai, which, as I wrote in the column, means that the airport is ready to invite the world to Boston. But it's not just the ordinary people that we think of as riding the T. That's a constituency now for a good public transit system. It's all these people coming in from all over the world. And Logan, in the words of Massport CEO Tom Glynn, Logan needs a healthy MBTA. So that's another kind of pressure, I think. If we're this world-class city that's going to attract the world here, how are we going to transport the world when they arrive?
Yeah.
And that's part of the business equation, the economic equation that I think Governor Baker has to think about.
You can fly direct from Shanghai to Boston, but once you get to Boston, you better hope for a taxi and not take the T. And if you hope for a taxi, you better hope that the streets are plowed.
Right. And they said, I mean, according to Tom Glynn over at Massport, Logan has one of the highest percentage of people who fly in and do attempt to take the T, as well as all the workers there take the T in as well. So it can't be considered as two separate systems. I think someone has to think of it as a one big holistic thing.
I want to ask you both about management and leadership of both Charlie Baker and Boston Mayor Marty Walsh during all of this. Tom, this has really tested the city and its leaders, the slew of storms. It's also tested certainly our patience as well as our resources. How would you rate, as a former city councilor, first Boston Mayor Marty Walsh?
Well, Walsh is in his sophomore year as mayor, but I think he's still looking like a rookie. I do not think that he did well this time around at all. Last year, he was able to escape. This year, I really think, particularly with the first blizzard, it was a very poor cleanup. You know, we declared a snow emergency, and yet streets weren't plowed to the curbs. If we had had melting or some warming weather after that, I suppose there wouldn't have been much damage. But instead, we just had continued cold. And then he compounded the problem with this absolutely abysmal decision to have the Super Bowl parade just after a second snowstorm had hit us.
Well, he did hold it off by a day.
We held it off by a day because no one could get around. But he only held it off by a day.
But amazingly, people came. And those people who came seemed to be pretty happy.
And that's great. And I'm delighted that Boston decided to not plow the streets of the neighborhoods in order that the people from out of town could come to a Super Bowl parade. But I think that's probably the wrong priority.
Joan, what do you think?
Well, I agree somewhat with what Tom just said. I think Mayor Walsh completely underestimated the citizen reaction to the Super Bowl parade versus the perception that their neighborhood wasn't getting cleaned up. I'm not a Boston resident. I've driven around enough to see that there are lots of mounds of snow and lots of cars that seem to be there until June under those mounds of snow. In politics, perception equals reality. And he can say over and over again that the parade did not come at the expense of the neighborhoods, but as long as people think that's what happened, it's bad for him. I think after the parade, and I think I read this in Tom's piece in Politico, and I agree with him on this point, I think he got religion, and he has dedicated himself to getting down those mounds and plowing and clearing the streets, and is doing a much better job in the past week or so.
Okay. Meghna's got a couple of questions for you both. But first, Charlie Baker, how would you rate his leadership throughout these storms, Tom?
I think that he started off really abysmally. I thought his very clumsy attempt to slough off blame on the MBTA and on Beverly Scott in particular was a very, very bad move.
The head of the
MBTA. You're head of the state. You're governor for the state. You have to own these problems, and you can't simply start finger pointing.
Has he gotten better?
He's gotten a lot better. Today's press conference is an example of that. But I think that he has figured out that he does own this, that he has to take responsibility for it, and he can't point fingers.
John Finocchi, what do you think?
Well, Tom and I don't usually agree on things so much, but I agree with you on this, and I've written as much. I think he really mishandled the Beverly Scott situation. And the biggest thing about it was not that he insulted one person. It was that he let down voters who thought they were bringing in this guy who not only knew how to manage, but promised to get people on the same page to solve problems. And instead, he sort of drew this line between the T and state government. And he may be right technically in terms of who the GM of the T reports to, but it really came off badly. I think today's announcement that he's forming this commission is a step forward in taking ownership. But again, we have to see how it's resolved.
So let me ask both of you a little bit as we turn to these two new WBUR polls that are out this week about public perception and public mood given the moment we find ourselves in. Because one of the polls was regarding the T, and the WBUR poll found that only 5% of folks surveyed blame Governor Baker for the T's woes. They more essentially seem to recognize the truth that these problems have been a long time in coming. But more than 80% of people say that fixing the system should be a major priority. So, Tom, let me just start with you. I mean, that Governor Baker seems to be responding right now very strongly to that fundamental truth that we have a majority of folks out there who says he has to do something.
Yeah, for people, you know, on occasion it's easy to mock voters and say they have no idea what's going on. But that poll actually does demonstrate that people do know what's going on. They understand that the problem is systemic, and it's something that happened over a number of years, and they grant that point. And I think that's to the degree, while people are kind of pissed off right now, they are at least, you know, tolerating this circumstance. But at the same time, you do expect present political leadership, having seen a problem, to fix that problem. And I think he's got a year.
Joan, and what do you think about the political motivation to do something long-term to fix the T? People want something done now, but what about, say, in May when, hopefully, knock on wood, there is no more snow and ideally the trains
are optimist.
Back on schedule?
Yeah, that's what you think.
Well, I mean, I suppose he can try to run down the clock or whatever the sports analogy is and hope that when May comes along and June comes along, people forget this. But I think this is going to really hang around and linger in people's minds for a long time. It really disrupted the city. It disrupted not just the T, which is really important, but the gridlock of traffic. I mean, I've never seen people so kind of cranky and grumpy and ugly. Boston has really been just, you know, at a standstill. You have a op-ed piece in the New York Times today calling it Boston's winter from hell. I think this is going to hang around for a while, and I agree with Tom again. I think he has he has to solve this. He has to take some positive steps to fix the transportation system, because it isn't just about angry tea riders. It's about the economy. It's mm-hmm. about how we are holding ourselves out as a city to the rest of the world.
You know, it may also have to do with the Olympics, potentially, and this has to do as well with how long a memory we all have. The poll that Meghna mentioned also found that Greater Boston has soured a bit on the idea of hosting the 2024 Summer Olympic Games. This poll found that Boston area residents oppose a bid by a margin of 46% to 44%. That's still about half and half, and it is also, though, a drop in support since 1 month ago. So let's listen to now what Todd Domke, the political analyst, told Bob Oakes this morning on Morning Edition, that he thinks that the storms could indeed be critical to public opinion on the Olympics.
This could be a turning point. This is a major shift where the initial euphoria then becomes skepticism and then hardens into opposition. That's a very serious threat to the pro-Olympic forces. There's growing worry, I think, among people that this will cost billions and that indirectly, if not directly, the taxpayers will be picking up the tab.
Okay, I guess that depends on whether or not people will actually remember it. The Olympics are far out. And also whether or not those whose voices weigh the heaviest are those who are really affected in Boston by the tea right now. Tom, what do you think?
Well, I'm not a fan of the Olympics, but in this case, I think I'm agreeing with John Fish. This is probably pretty ephemeral. We're just feeling very cranky right now. And Fish also makes the argument, and whether you want to buy it or not, but it becomes a pretty compelling argument, that the Olympics provide the opportunity for that major investment we were just talking about in terms of fixing the T. So curiously enough, I think it may end up potentially, if this is played correctly by the pro-Olympic forces, they can actually play the T's ills as something that justifies the Olympics.
Joan?
Finally, something we can disagree upon.
All right.
Here we go. Well, I do think this is going to linger, and I don't think it's an ephemeral thing that's going to disappear in June or July. And in terms of, I think the whole problem, the core problem with pitching the Olympics is, what do we want our priorities to be? John Fish will say this is going to improve infrastructure, this will improve public transit. But is it going to improve it to accommodate an Olympics, or is it going to improve it to accommodate the real needs of the citizens of Massachusetts? I think those are two separate questions with two separate answers. If they can make the case that it's one and the same, then I guess maybe. But I think there's real skepticism now, and it's going to grow.
Mm. Yeah. Sorry about that, Tom.
No, I completely agree. That's true.
Well, so you're back to agreeing again.
I think it is ephemeral, but I think Joan's exactly right, which is that there's a lot of reasons to be very skeptical about the Olympics.
Yeah.
And I share those reasons. I share that skepticism.
Well, I just wanted to spend just a little bit of time talking briefly about this news from Walmart that they're going to increase the minimum wage to $10 per hour next February. There are 11,000 Walmart employees in Massachusetts. So, Joan, just briefly, what do you think? I mean, any increase in the minimum wage is going to make a difference in the lives of folks like these Walmart associates. But your thoughts on this?
Well, as a matter of dollars and cents, the increase still doesn't give people a really good wage. But I think that as a matter of symbolism, it is important because it shows that Walmart has finally come to the conclusion that it doesn't want to be perceived as this Neanderthal exploiter of workers. And it's trying to change its image. And I think it shows that that change can happen and that pressure and that activists can make change happen. Whether this is enough change is, another question. And it says something about the economy and the workforce, that there's a less desperate workforce willing to settle for these low wages.
Right. Tom?
So I have a lot of skepticism about Walmart and really that its intentions are pure and that suddenly it's become the knight in shining armor. I think that this is driven by the economy. I think what we're really seeing here is something that economists have been talking about for a long time. As the economy's improved, we've seen the unemployment rate drop. We haven't seen wages budge. People say that eventually that's going to happen. Eventually there's enough pressure. And I think that pressure is finally here. Walmart can't hire the people it needs to hire anymore. Not when similar employers, like, say, Trader Joe's, are paying several dollars more per hour for the same kind of people and are offering benefits.
Okay, we're going to leave just enough time for hubbubs, the all-important hubbubs of the week. We have stories that fell below the fold but caught the attention of people like you, Tom Keene.
baseball, as you know, is America's pastime. But I think as I go to the games, I find that I'm more just passing time. And indeed, the games are at least 3 hours and sometimes 4 hours. And we're not talking about extra inning games. We're just talking about regular games. Finally, it looks like Major League Baseball is going to do something about this. They're actually going to start putting a clock in between innings. You're going to be allowed a certain number of minutes, and then the team has to come on the field. Baseball players won't be able to step off the mound just to wander around like Nomar Garciaparra used to do, or even like David Ortiz does now. If you've ever been to Cape Cod and seen the Cape Cod League play, you'll see great baseball that happens in about 2.5 hours, and that's what Major League Ball needs to get to.
All right, Joan Vanacki, yours.
Well, I would like to bring attention to a letter to the editor that ran yesterday in the Boston Globe under the headline, "It Would Be Strange for a Mother Not to Cry." It was written by Tina Sherry, the mother of Louis D. Brown, who was a victim of caught in a crossfire of was murdered. And she and other victims of families of homicide victims wrote this letter raising questions about the judge's instruction in the Aaron Hernandez trial telling the mother of Odin Lloyd not to cry on the stand. It's a really powerful letter. I would recommend people Googling it and trying to read it. It raises an interesting question. Would the family members of victims of the Marathon bombing be instructed not to cry? And the judge has never really explained that instruction, and I think she should.
Okay. Thank you very much, Joan Vanacki. Thanks to you as well, Tom Keene. Tom Keene, former Boston City Councilor and contributor to the Boston Globe. Joan Vanacki, columnist for the Boston Globe. Nice to have you both on the program. Have a good weekend.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Well, stick with us, because when we come back, we'll go behind the scenes at one of the MBTA's main subway maintenance facilities. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Lisa Mullins. This is Radio Boston.